It's been an unusual year in presidential politics, and just a few weeks remain before the election. Donald Trump has alarmed critics and even some fellow Republicans, although his most dedicated supporters still back him. Democrat Hillary Clinton is the favorite after a series of unflattering reports about Trump, but she still faces questions about trust and honesty and whether she can spark enough enthusiasm to get Democrats to the polls. Many voters remain unhappy about their choices in this very unusual presidential contest. Back here in Rhode Island, Democrats continue to dominate state politics, but one Republican is waging a spirited challenge to one of the state's most powerful elected officials. We'll talk about that. These are some of the topics we'll explore tonight during Policy and Pino, Rhode Island Public Radio's ongoing discussion of state issues. I'm Rhode Island Public Radio political reporter Ian Donis, and I'd like to introduce our panel. On my immediate right is Brian Newberry, the Republican leader in the Rhode Island House of Representatives. He was first elected to the House in 2008 from a district that includes North Smithfield and part of Burrillville. Newberry works as a lawyer in Boston with the firm of Donovan Haydom. Do I have that right? The pronunciation, LLP. Thanks for joining us, Brian. And seated next to Brian is a longtime political activist on the Democratic side in Rhode Island, Kate Coyne McCoy. Kate ran unsuccessfully for Congress in 2000 and was a regional director for the fundraising group Emily's List. In 2014, Coyne McCoy operated a super PAC that backed Gina Raimondo's gubernatorial campaign, and she now works as a political consultant. And last but not certainly least is my buddy and colleague, Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay, a longtime former reporter for the Province Journal who's been with Rhode Island Public Radio with me since 2009. Thank you all for joining us. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, the dominant news of the last week came out, I think it was last Friday, with an 11-year-old tape about Donald Trump making some very kind of lewd comments about women. That has dominated the news cycle nationally since then. Brian Newberry, you represent a more Republican-leaning part of the state in Burrillville and North Smithfield, and you yourself are a Republican. How is this playing in Rhode Island?
A couple things. It is dominating the news, and it should be a big news story. By the same token, I think that the WikiLeaks documents have been released on Hillary Clinton should be an equally big story, but that's a discussion for another time. I don't have an opponent this year, but I am walking my district like I always do, and I would point out that my district voted twice for Barack Obama by about the same margins as he won the popular vote nationally. So I always kind of point to it may not be representative of Rhode Island politics, otherwise I might not be the speaker. I might be the speaker, but it is sort of emblematic of the way I think the middle class of America feels. And the general feeling that people in my district have about this presidential election is probably like many of you, and certainly me, is disgust at both of the major party candidates, neither one of whom I think are fit for office. That's how it's playing out. If you're asking me who I think is going to win the election, I think the Electoral College map and I think the polls clearly show Hillary Clinton's probably going to win at this point. But you know what? There's been one surprise after another in this election, so I'm not going to make any predictions on that score. But that's how it's being perceived in, call it, middle-class Rhode Island America.
Scott McKay, it's no surprise that these kind of salacious stories involving Trump get a lot of attention. But what about the comment from Brian Newberry that to him it seems there's not proportionate coverage of some of the issues involving Hillary Clinton, and how do you think this is playing out in Rhode Island?
I agree with him, not to the extent that it's any kind of partisanship. I just think there's been a huge lack of coverage of issues. I think it's been very difficult for the average voter to sit down there and decide, okay, what do they really think about the economy? During even the Democratic primaries, we had between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, I thought we had a very strong discussion about the role of the federal government, the role of the economy, education, all of these issues. And all of a sudden, I'm not hearing much of anything except the back and forth, the thrust and parry and this salacious thing and that one. And of course, at my age, as far as locker room banter goes, as I tell people, it's usually about who's got the Advil.
All right, that's a good time to get Kate Coyne McCoy in here. Kate, you're obviously the only female representative on our panel. Is there anything particular about this moment in American politics where, you know, we've never heard a lot of this kind of rhetoric or phrasing in the context of a presidential race associated with Donald Trump? And you come from Scituate, also a more somewhat conservative part of the state. What's your sense of how this is resonating?
I work all across the country. So I'm on a plane almost every week working in politics all across the country. And I think it's playing here in Scituate and in Providence and in Boca Raton and in Hoboken, New Jersey, the same way, especially for people that look like me and have the equipment that I have. It's horrifying. It's appalling. It's disgusting. And I would argue that there hasn't been a whole lot of issue coverage, because we are all so emboldened and embraced by the salacious. The beginning of this campaign was sort of focused on issues, but where we are now in the muck and mire is no good for our children. It's no good for any of us, and I don't see how we get out of it after this.
Well, let's go back to Brian Newberry. Hillary Clinton has a lot of issues of her own. There's been a lot of publicity about her email server, her missing emails, embarrassing emails that have come out through WikiLeaks, as you mentioned. Do you think she's offered an effective response to any of this, or is it merely being brushed aside in the tsunami of sensational coverage about Trump?
Well, I think it's being brushed aside. And you know, the real point, one of the questions I know you want to get to is, how did we get here with these nominees? It's sort of interesting. I mean, you look at the Democratic race. Bernie Sanders came out of nowhere. He was an independent. I think he went back to being an independent. He was the only real challenge to the Clinton machine because they have such a control on the Democratic Party. But I think we would all agree that if you had almost any Republican candidate running besides Donald Trump, Hillary would probably be down by about 20 points right now, and vice versa. Donald Trump became the nominee, and as a Republican who did not support him, I supported Marco Rubio, frustrated me very much. I think there were 17 announced candidates. So naturally, the guy with the celebrity TV coverage who says whatever's on his mind ended up winning the early primaries, and people couldn't get traction, couldn't get money. And that's how we ended up with Donald Trump. And it frustrates me because I think both of these candidates are, as I said earlier, unfit for office. And I wish, I mean, I'm not a Democrat, but I wish the Democrats had better alternatives too, because I'm not looking forward to the winner of this election, no matter who it is.
Kate Coyne McCoy, as a Democratic activist, what do you say to the criticism from the other side of the aisle? There are many conservatives or Republicans who perceive Hillary Clinton as being corrupt, untrustworthy, dishonest, just hell-bent on achieving power. What do you say?
This is a woman who has devoted her entire adult life, her entire life, to the service of others. She could have been a big shot multi-million lawyer. She went to work for the Children's Defense Fund out of college. I don't need to recite her resume. I think we all know it. There is absolutely no one more qualified in the history than to be president of this country than Hillary Clinton. And we've established during the primary, no one gives a poop about her emails.
Quick response here from Brian Newberry.
Yeah, I don't want to spend the whole hour debating the qualifications of Hillary Clinton, but I would like to know what she's actually accomplished in all these years. I know she's got a lot of titles. She had a Senate seat handed to her. She was Secretary of State during what I think was a disastrous tenure in the Barack Obama administration.
Hold me back, Scott. Hold me back.
No, I mean, she's very intelligent, very well educated, but honest to God, what has she actually accomplished? And speaking of money, nobody has gotten richer in politics in American history than the Clintons. But we don't have to go on about
right.
The Clintons. I think we all know where we stand on that.
We could go all night this way. But Scott McKay, how about this point that Hillary Clinton has had? She's a very imperfect candidate. There's a lot of antipathy or ambivalence about her. Has she responded effectively to her issues?
I think she's done the best she could. I mean, look, all the polls show that both of these candidates are flawed. Let's face it. Their unfavorables are above 50%. A lot of people think that Hillary Clinton's untrustworthy, and a lot of other people think that Donald Trump is unhinged. So I think you've got a very unusual election, and I will blame the media for some of this. It seems to me that a lot of mainstream media have fallen into the cable news and internet news tropes of just pushing ratings. And, you know, I mean, some of these people, anytime Trump said anything, CNN would cut in live and put him on there. And we all know they had soaring ratings and they live and die by that. But boy, at some point, I hope that there's a reexamination after this is over about the journalistic values that, I don't know, that I was brought up with, and so were you, Ian. You've been a long-term reporter. Insofar as we try to focus the issues more on political issues, the issues that we face, and a little less on infotainment. I mean, Ian and I grew up in a media world where we kind of knew the difference between entertainment and news. And now, you know, that line is drawn in the sand at low tide. And it's just totally changed. We have a totally new environment. I think that's part of the issue.
Well, let's talk about where the rubber meets the road. I mean, right now, the consensus of most polls that if the election was held today, Hillary Clinton would win. But there are a couple of weeks to go, and you never know how things might change. I'd like to ask our panel, if either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump wins, how likely are they to be successful in implementing what they talked about during their campaign? And let's start with Brian Newberry.
What have they talked about during their campaign? No, I mean, seriously, you know, I couldn't tell you what Hillary Clinton's platform is. I couldn't tell you what Donald Trump's platform is either.
You know, as we know in Rhode Island, that the top issue is the economy, and I think that's a key issue across the nation. And this is a time in America that's characterized by slower economic growth. So do you think Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton would have any more success in improving the economy?
Actually, I will answer that. In respect to Trump, as I understand it, he is basically a protectionist. And I mean, I'm not taking blame away from the Republican primary voters that put him in this position, but his protectionist plans generally do not fit with what's perceived as Republican philosophy. I don't actually consider Donald Trump to be a Republican, which sounds like an odd statement, and I'm not taking away the blame from the voters that put him there. But I don't think of him as a Republican. I'm not sure how indistinguishable a lot of his economic policies are actually from some of the things that Hillary Clinton might do. All right, I don't know. Which one can work better with Congress? I'm not sure either one can.
Let's go to Scott McKay. How do you see the outlook for a better economy in America under either of these candidates?
Well, here's the strange thing about the way, particularly the media, covers presidential elections. It's all about the narrative. It's like a prize fight or a football game. We focus hours and hours and hours of media time debates on deciding which candidate of these two will win. We also have two third-party candidates. So there's this grand national narrative about who becomes the president, when in fact is we all know one thing. If the last 8 years have shown us anything, it's basically the Congress is very important. And I think Clinton will get very little done if she wins and the Republicans hold on to the Senate and the House. I think Trump, if he wins, will get very little done if the Democrats take back the Senate.
Kaycon McCoy, you describe Hillary Clinton as being super well-prepared, having a golden resume. Will she be able to deliver on the promise of her campaign of a more united, economically stronger America?
She will, because the Democrats will take the Senate. I believe Katie McGinty in Pennsylvania will win. Ann Kirkpatrick and John McCain are locked in a very close battle. She could win. Maggie Hassan, who is governor of New Hampshire now, will be elected to the United States Senate. Kamala Harris in California will be elected to the United States Senate. I'm thrilled to say that we probably will tip the balance with women. And with a solid Democratic Senate and the presidency, we should be able to actually move something. Now, that's not to say that the complete discord and discourse in Washington won't continue to be a stumbling block. I was furious at Barack Obama for taking so long to try and get people together in the middle. At some point, I think you got to shove things, you know, get things done. And I think with the Senate and the presidency, the Democrats will be successful at moving an economic policy.
Well, there's a bad history here in Rhode Island of saying shove it, as Frank Caprio said a few years ago. But I'd like to stay here with Kaycon McCoy for a second. We saw how during the Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders captivated a lot of the enthusiasm that Hillary Clinton has not replicated in the same kind of way. There's a slate of progressive candidates running for the legislature here in Rhode Island. We can talk more about that later. But how do you see the long-term effect of this kind of split between the Sanders movement and the Clinton movement within the Democratic Party?
You know, 20 years ago, I probably would have been a Bernie Sanders follower. I think as you get older, you see shades of gray and less black and white. Black and white is a luxury. I have tremendous respect for what Bernie Sanders accomplished and how he drove a debate and brought in lots and lots of young people to the process. Many of those young people that we are having trouble keeping in the process. But I think as we move forward, Hillary Clinton is in fact a progressive. Her policies embrace progressive ideology. And once she is elected, you will begin to see that.
Brian Newberry, what about the long-term effect of Donald Trump on the National Republican Party? There are some people who have been saying this is really terrible for the National Republican Party. It's going to be fractured. Other people don't buy that. What do you think?
Well, I said earlier, I'm not going to make any actual predictions, but assuming he does not win the presidency, I think he's going to go his own way, and that'll be the end of Donald Trump and the Republican Party. There's always been split, you know. People always talk about the demise of this party, the demise of that party. People were talking about the demise of the Democrats when I was in high school. It sways back and forth. You know, as Kate was saying, you got the Democratic Party, you've got the Sanders wing and the Clinton wing. There's no such thing as a dominant force within a political party other than in that electoral moment. So he's going to go his own way and disappear is what I think.
Right. The historian Arthur Schlesinger talked about the cycles of history, right? Well, let's put the same question to Scott McKay. How do you see the long-term fallout on both sides, Democrat and Republican, from the Sanders-Clinton split and the Trump movement?
You know, I think people who engage in doom and gloom are wrong. I mean, in 1912, everybody said the Republican Party was over after the Bull Moose fracture, and no, they recovered. After 1964, when Goldwater got pasted, people said it's the end of the Republican Party. Guess what? 4 years later, they elected a president. When the Democratic Party splintered during that mess in Chicago and the whole three-way battles, I do think that in 1972, I think Brian's referring to this, I was in college and McGovern got beat 49 states to one. Everybody said the Democratic Party's fractioned apart. They'll never win again. 4 years later, Jimmy Carter's president. So as long as we have the Electoral College as a winner-take-all, we've pretty much enshrined the two parties. And what happens usually is ferment happens within these parties. I think on the Democratic side that, yes, the Bernie Sanders people, if they stick around, and this doesn't always happen with insurgent young people, but if they stick around, they will move the Democratic Party to the left. And as far as Hillary Clinton being a progressive, you know, there's a lot of people, regardless of gender, who consider, a lot of liberal people I know, that anybody who voted for that Iraq war should be disqualified from being president of the United States.
And a quick follow-up here from Brian Newberry.
Scott, I hate to say it, but I was 1 year old when McGovern lost, so I wasn't thinking of that. But to your point, though, I was thinking how Bill Clinton brought the Democrats back. No, I was thinking Bill Clinton bring the Democrats back when I was in college. But no, but you know, I want to say I am not a believer at all in third party movements for that reason. Our electoral system, for better or for worse, rewards two dominant parties, whether it's the Whigs and the Democratic Republicans or it's the modern Republicans and Democrats. And I think that if you want to get active and involved in politics, you need to pick a party. It doesn't mean your party's always right, believe me, I know that. But you need to pick a party and work within that party to try to move it towards where you want to be.
I will say one quick thing. The Republican Party, either way, probably needs a large reexamination. They had one after the last election, after Romney, and I think the demographics of this country, there just aren't enough angry white people to sustain a party. And I think that's part of the Trump phenomenon.
No, but you know
phenomenon.
What? I agree, but you know what? It goes to my point earlier. If Marco Rubio were the nominee, or not, I want to say Jeb Bush, but if Marco Rubio or Scott Walker were the nominee right now.
John Kasich, I think.
John Kasich as well. They'd be up by 20 points.
It's all right, say 20 points. We're going to have more of this back and forth in a bit, but we're going to take a quick break. Coming up, more discussion of the 2016 presidential race. I'm Ian Donis. You're listening to Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio, and we're recording in front of a live audience here at the Providence Athenaeum. Stay with us.